With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Antonio Brown. All right, let's be clear about something.
What?
Antonio Brown isn't Randy Moss.
Say what?
They don't even inhabit the same football planet. You can play with the numbers all you want. You can tell me that through nine seasons, Brown is on pace to surpass Jerry Rice as the all-time leading receiver.
Yeah.
So? You can tell me that through nine seasons, Brown has already appeared in more Pro Bowls than Moss did in 14.
Yeah.
So, Antonio isn't on Randy's level. Let's stop the madness. Let's don't disrespect Randy Moss's impact on the National Football League. Randy Moss resides in a very select group of football players who can truly be labeled forces of nature. Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, doesn't reside in this group. Neither does Jerry Rice. A force of nature changes the way we view the game the moment he shows up. Dan Marino, Reggie White, Deion Sanders, Barry Sanders, Lawrence Taylor, Ray Lewis, and arguably the greatest force to ever hit the NFL, Randy Moss. Moss should have won MVP his rookie year. He rocked the NFL from the get-go. He turned Denny Green's Vikings into an offensive juggernaut. Led by 35-year-old quarterback Randall Cunningham, Minnesota shattered the NFL record for points in 1998. It was all Randy Moss. He couldn't be stopped. He caught a rookie record 17 TD passes. He ran by double and triple coverage. The Vikings finished the regular season 15-1. Had kicker Gary Anderson knocked in a 39-yard field goal in the NFC Championship, the Vikings likely would have won the Super Bowl. Anderson missed one field goal all season, a relative chip shot with 2 minutes to play in the NFC Championship. At age 30, Moss took his magic act to New England. He promptly turned Tom Brady into the superstar quarterback we know today. Brady had never been first-team All-Pro before Moss's arrival. Brady had never thrown more than 28 TD passes in a season before Moss's arrival. In 2007, Tom Brady tossed 50 touchdown passes, 23 of them to Randy Moss. The Patriots broke the Vikings record for points in a season. The Patriots finished the season 16-0. A lucky catch by David Tyree cost New England the Super Bowl. Antonio Brown is a tremendous football player. He's not Randy Moss. Moss simplified and dictated defenses. You had to roll a safety his way, and you had to back that safety up. A quarterback and an offensive coordinator could read the defense with their eyes closed. In the running game, Moss's mere presence blocked a corner and a safety. Moss made everybody's job easier. Everybody. When Moss is on your team, you don't need to be the second coming of Bill Walsh to call offensive plays. Whatever amount of headache Moss caused with his occasional on-field antics and less than ideal effort, he made up for it simply by putting on a uniform. Hell, you could feel Moss's impact when he was standing on the sideline watching the other team's offense. The opponent knew damn well it better score 28 or 30 points because Moss was on the other team. Bill Belichick insinuated there are similarities between Brown's arrival in New England and Moss's arrival. Nah, Brown is a high-class Chad Johnson, an undisciplined, attention-starved AFC North castoff. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Mark Schlereth and LeVar Arrington. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Think AB will come anywhere close to a Moss-like impact with the Patriots?
No, not at all. And I think that's a good thing. You got to understand the difference. Yeah, it's a damn good thing. They got a good problem right here. You got to take yourself back. I've noticed that you don't like to stay in time in present tense or be able to time travel and remember what you were thinking in those moments. Let's go back. Let's get in our DeLorean, shall we? Since you wear the same uniform doesn't mean it's the same situation. So I know they're all Patriots, Randy Moss and Antonio Brown, but let's talk about the difference in the room and the difference in philosophy. We have Hall of Fame quarterbacks like a Brett Favre coming out now and said they don't even need AB. Not a damn soul in the world said that after 2006 when they looked at this Patriots offense in that wide receiver room. The wide receiver room that had Wes Welker, who was cut from the Charger and was so-so with the Dolphins. Wasn't Wes Welker who we knew and became. And then you talk about Jabbar Gaffney and guys in that, Dante Stallworth. I mean, good players, but come on. This room now has a Super Bowl MVP and future Hall of Famer, if you listen to this offseason, and Julian Edelman, and Josh Gordon, if he can stay right, that Josh Gordon. So now it's a completely different situation. But let's talk about philosophy, not just personnel. Tom Brady, 9+ touchdowns, over 40 yards back when Moss was there. Now, last year, before AB, 3. Yards per attempt, down. Tom Brady is throwing long handoffs, brother, and it's on purpose. So now they're not even going to ask of AB to do the same things they did with Randy Moss, so therefore they won't get the same results, which is a good problem to have.
Hmm. Yeah, well, listen, I take umbrage. They would have likely won the Super Bowl. That was my Super Bowl team, you dirty dog. No.
They would have likely won.
Go ahead. We'd have opened a can of whoop-ass on them. That would have been Super Bowl 33. So that's first. Second, will he have the same impact? No, he's not going to have the same impact because, as Marcellus pointed out, this is a completely different offense. Mm-hmm. This is an offense that attacks the underneath, and you have to understand that's what they do. Now, he can have a huge impact in that, but he isn't going over the top like Randy Moss was going over the top. You know, the old, he's even, he's leaving? That was Randy Moss. I mean, he was just gone.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that will limit his impact to some degree is I would say this is just from my mind because I don't have any stats on this, but how many times have we seen Antonio Brown make a big play off a broken play? To me, it's the extended plays. Yeah. You know, Ben Roethlisberger knocks off somebody that's trying to sack him, stiff arms another guy, they're running around, it becomes schoolyard football, and Antonio Brown winds up in the end zone. That happens a lot in Pittsburgh. It's not going to happen in New England. They are on schedule, man. Tom Brady is not going to scramble around. He's going to climb the pocket. If nothing's there, he'll throw it away and live to play another down. So those parts are different. So I don't think Antonio Brown, I think he's going to have a huge impact, don't get me wrong. But it's not the Randy Moss type of impact because it's a totally different system or scheme.
There's levels to impact. And the one thing that hasn't been mentioned and is a different gear, I guess I'll shift to with it is, no, he won't have the same type of impact as Randy Moss did. And I think the singular biggest reason is because of the leadership aspect of it. I didn't hear it mentioned one time. And I think a lot of times when you're as athletically gifted as Randy Moss is, a lot of times the attention to detail that man paid attention to while he played this game, the way he taught and guided and mentored, you know, Josh Gordon needs a mentor. All right, so maybe that's a bad situation for Antonio Brown to be around a Josh Gordon. Maybe that's not a good combination, a good marriage to be in the same meeting room. Whereas a guy like Randy Moss would have not only held him accountable as a human, but he would have taught him certain things that could still help him at this point in time in his career. So when you're talking about levels of impact, we can use all the stats we want to use. We can talk all of the things that Tom Brady had and Tom Brady didn't have. The one singular thing that people do not give Randy Moss the amount of credit that he deserves is the type of leader that he was on and off the field. And I think that that's the reason why he's not going to be as big an impact.
I want to echo that for a minute because, you know, I worked at ESPN for a long time with Teddy Bruschi, who I have the utmost respect for as a good friend. And he will tell you, as many other people within that organization, that Randy Moss is one of the most astute, intelligent football players. See, to get from great to Hall of Fame great, the difference is athleticism will make you great for a season, for two, for three, whatever. But you know what keeps you at Hall of Fame level? is from the neck up, your intelligence, your football acumen. And people don't give him credit. People will tell you that have played with him, one of the smartest football players that they've ever been around. Them blessed with that God-given athletic ability, he's unstoppable.
You all are making my point. Everybody's enhancing my point, in my view, because here's the thing where I think Belichick is miscalculating. When he says, someone asks you about bringing Brown, and he goes, well, they said the same thing about Randy Moss. Yeah. And he's like, oh, we've already been down this road, basically is what he's saying. And what I'm saying is, like, there's some quirks to Randy Moss's personality. There's some quirks to things he does on the field that some people didn't like. But the difference was, Randy Moss, if you just tossed him out on the field, Tom Brady's job got easier, the offensive coordinator's job got easier, the offensive line, the running backs. Randy Moss justified whatever headache he produced everywhere he played, except for them couple years in Oakland, maybe. Who knows what happened there? But when he was in Minnesota and he pretended to pull his pants down and all that, whatever he did, his presence justified it. That will not be the case with Antonio Brown. You just toss Antonio Brown on the field, it's not the same as tossing Randy out there. A lot of Antonio Brown's success had to do with the quarterback he was playing with. It was the right quarterback for his style of play. I just don't, when Antonio Brown's headaches come, I think Brady and a lot of those guys are going to roll their eyes and be like, damn, is this really worth it? Randy Moss, never crossed your mind. Hell yeah, just line him up and put him out there. He ain't even got a move, and he's made an impact.
You know what's funny? It never crossed your mind if you didn't pay attention, but I did. 2004, Randy Moss, Minnesota, 500-something yards, 13 games. That ain't Randy Moss. Goes to Oakland, 700 yards. That ain't Randy Moss. Next year, 1,005 yards. That ain't even Randy Moss. But then he goes to New England, and Randy Moss is back. So that's... We're talking about 2-3 years of Randy Moss not being Randy Moss, and got corrected in part because he was a New England Patriot. And now you're going to talk about Antonio Brown. We can't talk about his production. 6 straight years, 100 catches or more, 1,200 plus yards, 8 touchdowns or more. So now we're going to go into personality and take our eyes off the prize. This is a production business. And Antonio Brown, if you want to stay laser-focused on production, has showed you nothing but greatness. And even the greater Randy Moss showed you inconsistency. But I
think let me say this, LeVar. Okay.
I'm just saying.
Antonio Brown has played with one Hall of Fame quarterback his entire career.
I give you that.
Randy Moss was making Hall of Famers. He had Dante Culpepper looking like one. Randall Cunningham looking like one at 35. Jeff George looking like one at 31 or 32. Brad Johnson looked damn good with him. Whoever he played with in Oakland, he helped.
So we're going to use that against Antonio because he has Big Ben and now Tom Brady? Oh, poor you.
No.
You never could be great because your quarterbacks are great.
No. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. I'm just saying the impact is different. And it's not even in the same planet. And I'm not disrespecting Antonio Brown. What he did in Pittsburgh put him on track to be into the Hall of Fame. But if they just think he's not the same as Randy Moss. Randy Moss could damn near make any of us look like a passable NFL quarterback.
I will tell you this, though, and here's the difference. You want to talk about elite-level athleticism.
Yeah.
Okay? Randy Moss has it in spades, man. He was as good as it gets when it comes to running deep, and he could run any route, but the deep. Antonio Brown has it in short area burst. And I will tell you, in today's game, I would rather have short area burst, elite-level athleticism, fluidity of hips,
you
and a way to...
Plays.
No, I'm with you. I would rather
but That's today's game.
If you're a running back, you want Randy Moss out there with you because the damn safeties have to back up. They have to be on their
heels.
That makes a difference. They're going to roll coverage Randy's way. Even though Chris Carter's on the other side, we're going to roll it to Randy.
You know what I want as a quarterback? I want elite level, short level, or elite level – short burst speed.
Reliable.
So I can throw the ball in under 2.1 seconds. Right. And Von Miller and Bradley Chubb and Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, and can I go on and on and on, can't get to my quarterback, because if I can get rid of the ball, it takes Marcellus.
It takes Marcellus,
and they had seven-step drops in Moss's.
Seven-step drops. Right. It's a different NFL,
Do
man.
You know that if you and I are going man-on-man, right, if you to get to the quarterback on a five-step drop, it takes 1.7 seconds for you to get to the quarterback on a seven-step drop. Yeah. If every ball is out of your hands in two and under, all I have to do is that to impede your progress. So, I mean, in today's game, and the other thing about today's game, back then, you got 35 opportunities to legitimately rush the passer. In today's game, watch the Broncos and Raiders play. You got maybe seven or eight legitimate eight pass rush opportunities. That's what you get today.
You can show me on film where Antonio Brown excelled in this 1.7 or 2 second release the ball. You said yesterday he's good when the play breaks down and he can get.
That's where he makes his explosives. But you don't catch 100+.
I know.
You don't catch 100+ balls if you're not open.
Thank you.
I still think impact and production can be categorized differently.
Yeah.
All right. Like sometimes you can look at impact and say that the impact isn't necessarily driven by the production. All right. So when you look at production, AB can be a productive player for this team. Right.
Impact,
but I think if we're still talking impact, right, I tend to look at impact from a respect level, right? If AB can come in there and earn the respect of his teammates and earn the respect of the coaching staff and earn the respect of the Patriots fan base, then he certainly has the chance to be on scale and on par with the greats that have played with New England. But if he doesn't come in and be that person, it doesn't mean he has to be a leader. He doesn't have to be a leader.
He won't be.
And he doesn't have to be. But if he comes in and he is able to do what he needs to do to earn the respect, then his impact is looked at differently.
And what do you respect the most in the locker room? Can you go get it? And this guy has showed you nothing short of it.
There's a little bit more.
But the most, I said the most.
Week one is in the books, but DraftKings isn't finished celebrating with some huge fantasy football contests. For week two of the football season, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you put in the code SPEAK during sign-up. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Download the DraftKings app now and use the code SPEAK for a limited time. Both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter the code SPEAK, that's S-P-E-A-K, to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code SPEAK only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonuses requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Mark Slair to LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's return to New England.
See you, Whit.
Where there is still a lot of confusion about Antonio Brown's future with the Patriots after allegations of sexual assault surfaced on Tuesday. Brown is practicing with the team this week, but Bill Belichick is being tight-lipped about whether the receiver will actually take the field Sunday against the Dolphins. All right, the question here is, and I think everyone knows my answer.
All right.
Have you lost any respect for the Patriot way after they have acquired and are standing by Antonio Brown?
Not at all. This is the Patriot way. The Patriot way is binary. There's only two results that happen to anybody that is put on this roster in terms of personnel and your personality. And the beauty of the Patriots is this. If you don't do it our way, trust me, you will never disrupt our goal and you'll be out of here. Just that simple. It's binary. Either you jump in and jump aboard or you're ghost. And we know that the Patriots like to get rid of players, even good players, a year earlier than later. So the Patriot way is being exemplified right now by the acquisition of Antonio Brown. And if you're going to show up and do what you need to do, you're a Patriot. If not, peace out, brother. That's it.
Lost respect. This is the Patriot way. Mm-hmm. This is what they do. Anybody, like, I mean, what are you going to remember? Like, at the end of this run, okay, if this run ended today, Belichick and Brady announced today that they're done, right? You're going to remember Albert Haynesworth? Mm-hmm. You're going to remember clock-killing Corey Dillon? Mm-hmm. Randy Moss? What are you going to remember? You're going to remember 18 years, 9 Super Bowls, 6 World Championships. And you could talk about Spygate. You could talk about whatever you want. Let me tell you what goes on in an NFL locker room. When Bountygate came down, a bunch of NFL guys and NFL analysts were like, oh, I can't believe they did that. Baloney. Every single one of us was involved in bounties. I don't care what you say. Guilty as
guilty.
Charged.
Guilty.
Guilty. Every single one of us. But you know what? We, yeah. But we, you know what we did? We crucified the New Orleans Saints. Yeah. Like I said, no way, man. I was there. I did it. I mean, I played for one of the most regal men in the world in Joe Gibbs, and it was like an episode of Oprah every Monday morning after a game. You get a TV, you get a TV, you get a TV, you get a TV, you get 500, you get a grand, you get 100. That's the way it worked. We all did it. Mm. We look at this and say, no, that's the New England Patriots. That's who they are. I haven't lost any respect. I know who they are.
Mm. Yeah, I'll throw this one out at you, Whit. I know you look at the Twitterverse and you're like, you know what? Like, it's a place where everybody tries the Twitterverse, you know, and people try to be so politically correct based off of what takes place on Twitter. Yeah. You know, nobody wants to put themselves out there and deal with how politically correct the world has become, because it's so quick for people to jump on it and judge it and tear it apart. And that's just one of those things that the New England Patriots, they don't pay attention to. Mm. They don't respect it. They don't subscribe to it. They're going to do it the way that they want to do it. They've gotten the results that they've wanted to get. And quite frankly, the reputation has basically dictated that they don't have to justify things that other NFL franchises have to justify. And that's the reason why they have so much leeway to make some of the decisions that they make. If a franchise like you look at what's going on with the Browns right now, right? They have to always try to justify, why is Odell wearing the watch? Why is this guy brought in? Why didn't you win? All these different things that the Cleveland Browns have to justify and the players have to try to justify. You don't have to do that in New England.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Yep. You brought up Twitterverse.
Sure, Twitterverse.
This question wasn't directed at Twitter.
Okay.
It was directed at you.
Uh-huh.
Have you lost any respect for the Patriot way?
For the same exact reason of what I just gave. I don't lose respect. I didn't lose respect for them making this decision because based off of, and you know, yesterday you posed a question with the Tony Dungy part of it was, you know, did you lose respect or feel a certain type of way because that sends the wrong message. You know, the interesting thing about as a coach, I started thinking about, you know what, it's up to me as a coach to my players to be that example and show them what the difference between reality and perception truly is. So it's not for Bill Belichick or the New England Patriots or for Antonio Brown to dictate that for my players or for my kids in my home. So when I look at it from a grand perspective of, do I lose respect for the New England Patriots for making this decision? It's absolutely not, because the reality of it is that they're doing what they feel is best for them to do. And if in doing that, the track record of what it is that they've been able to get done by making those decisions has yielded such positive results, then again, I think they're judged and weighed differently than everyone else.
So what I think eventually will happen when this dynasty's over, there'll be documentaries done, there'll be 30 for 30s, and I'm just sorry. This will be a part of the narrative. And it does make me look. And again, I have really high respect for the New England Patriots and the top people involved, from Kraft to Belichick to Brady. I have a ton of respect for them. That's why I lose a little bit of respect for them, because I do think Aaron Hernandez will be part of the narrative. I do think when you don't need Antonio Brown and you still get greedy and go out there and get him and attach him to the strongest brand in football. And just for me, someone who adores football, defends football, I want my premier franchise to at least put on a bit of a perception that they're not as cutthroat, that there is some ethics driving their decision. And I think the Patriots, to some degree, are undercutting that with this and other decisions they've made and the Spygate and all the other things. It's all part of just a narrative like, man, these guys, they won, but boy, they did it any way possible. There was no ethics under guiding all of their decision making. And it does make me lose some respect for
it. Here would be my argument to the ethics aspect of it. And I understand that there's no right way to do anything wrong, right? Yeah. So just because everybody in the NFL is cheating, you know, I mean, the spotlight is on the Patriots, okay? And they've been the ones that have been scrutinized more than anybody else. But I'm here to tell you, every team tries to get any advantage they can get, and they go to great lengths to do that. But here's from an ethics standpoint in general. This is what I respect. Either toe the company line or we'll see you around sometime. They will not hesitate. I don't care if they dump $9 million on this guy. If he doesn't do what they tell him he's going to do when he is supposed to do it, he won't be there. And that part about them, it is non-negotiable.
Mark, I used to believe that. I believe it less now. And again, everybody here. And dude, this isn't a cheap shot.
Their starting cornerback.
This isn't a cheap shot. This isn't a cheap shot. I don't mean this is a cheap shot.
Okay.
But Penn State used to have this pristine perception. And, oh, my God, Joe Paterno, he was above everybody. And they did it the right way. And then all of a sudden,
I'm glad
there was a
crack
in the dam. And was like, oh, no.
I'm glad you brought that up because in my mind, I was thinking the same exact thing. And here's my response to that. The rebuttal would be the sensible thought of that is, we all have families, right? We all have families. And within that family, you have family members in the sense where it could be, you know, that person is a good person. The family name has a good name. But there's always going to be that one or two family members that brings reproach on your family, right? Doesn't make your family a bad family. Penn State isn't a bad school they have their flaws. New England may have their flaws in some of the people that they bring into their organization. I'll take that. But the reality of it is that it just plays a part of saying that, you know what, maybe they're not perfect. And having perfection, part of having perfection is being imperfect, is what I would say.
Hey guys, this is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit pacificlife.com.
LeVar Arrington is back. We're joined now by longtime NFL head coach Jeff Fisher. Let's move to Dallas. Sponsored by the Spark Cash Card from Capital One. Reportedly, there are growing indications that Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are finally nearing their much-discussed contract extension. After Dak's huge game on Sunday, Jerry Jones said a deal was imminent, and the whole sports world started telling Dallas to lock Dak up before his price goes even higher. But Stephen Jones pumped the brakes a little bit, saying they have to make a deal that works for both sides. I've gone the other direction.
Were you?
They need to get this deal done sooner rather than later. I would not let Dak get to Miami the third game on the schedule and let him put up 6-7 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let it happen. Dallas needs to get this done in a hurry.
They do, because the price is only going to go up. You got to think about it. By his performance, by the team's record, it's just going to inflate. You look at it, even if he has a suspect game or two and they haven't signed his deal yet, he's going to be able to lean on his body of work and say, I have won a playoff game in January. Did Carson Wentz? So then you can't even fall down to a number that's going to make it team friendly. And if you want to have the wild card of the franchise tag out there, you really going to play that game with Dak Prescott right now in terms of the cap going up 10 plus million every single year and playing that waiting game? So get it done before this next game, because I think it's just going up.
We have a voice of reason in Stephen Jones, and then you have the emotional Jerry Jones after the game. So basically, you remember the day when you win a game and the food's better in the cafeteria? You know, yeah. Oh, man, shoot, we won. Food's going to be good this week. Well, the food's good this week, so get it done. You know, Jerry's in a good mood. Steven's, you know, excited about it. Dak wants it. It's get it done. But big picture-wise, I don't think a week makes a difference. I don't think a pick, an incompletion, a touchdown pass. He's got a body of work. He's their future. They're not going to let him get away. They're going to get it done. They're on a roll. You got the linebacker, you know, you got the running back, quarterback, and the receiver, and they'll be happy for years.
Yeah, I think that that's what makes it super sensible for Dak to say, we don't need to rush. Yes, they need to get it done, and they need to get it done now for all the reasons that have just been stated. You have paid out a king's ransom to be able to try to finish this thing off to get that Super Bowl championship. And so by doing that and saying, okay, we're going to invest in this, we're going to invest in this guy, we're going to invest in that guy, you're down to Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott. The more Dak performs, the more he's going to want, the more his agents are going to want. And the reality of it is that, in my opinion, I think every week does matter. I think every week that he plays well or plays above the status quo or maintains being at that top upper echelons of quarterbacks, there's less justification, there's less negotiating room for Dallas. And so while you still have an opportunity, I say you go after it and try to get it done, shore it up now.
Here's the deal. Let's go back. Can you think of a Cowboy star that has ever left that organization and said something negative about the Cowboys?
No.
About
Marcellus Wiley.
He said star.
A star. But here's the point. Right. I heard Troy say something. Oh, Jerry's going to take care of you. Well, here's Jerry. Jerry simply says, hey, look, you're our guy. Trust us. We're taking care of everybody. We're going to take care of you. Just trust us. He can trust them to get this done. You got a golf deal that now you can compare it to. You got all these other deals. I think Jerry says, trust me. They say, Dak, go in this game. We'll get things
but
taken
Jeff,
care of.
Jeff, you can answer this better than anybody. How is there a difference between dealing with the player and dealing with the agent? The agent, Todd France, who's had a very successful career, but he has a chance here to, if he can get Dak some incredible contract, that elevates Todd France even more. And so if I'm Todd France, I'm sorry, I play this like a gambler. And I'm a crap shooter. And you just sitting around waiting for the one hot roller. You take all them losses, take all them losses, and then you find that hot roller and you double down and double down and double down and get all your money back. Dak, we've been waiting on Dak to throw for 400 yards for four seasons or three seasons or whatever. He does it.
But he's done it before against these Giants. I mean, he gets it done against these Giants. The conversation tells me that they're not close. They're not imminent. And I tell you why. Arthur Blank came out this summer and said, Julio Jones will be the highest paid wide receiver. And then it eventually got done. What we're seeing in Dallas right now is still this schism between you, and you're talking about Jerry and Steven, and I talking about Dak, but there's still no we. And when I hear Arthur Blank, and when I hear that deals are being done that are this level, highly priced players on your roster, you have to get to that understanding that the narrative, the conversation, the pronouns, everything changes in language. Right now, we're hearing a father who really owns the team saying one thing, his son pumping the brakes on that, and Dak just staying pat. That's not going to get it done. Someone has to concede for the Cowboys' way. We talk about the Patriots' way. What's the Cowboys' way? We know we want them going forward. Pay him now or pay him later. But if you pay him later, you're going to pay him greater.
But I think the Ezekiel Elliott situation shines a very positive light on what's taking place right now. Whether they're close or not, I think they all realize the realities that exist if Dak is continuously having success moving forward. So I think in terms of the language and how you're saying, you know, well, if he or if they, not a us and a we thing, I still think that you have to posture a little bit when you're negotiating.
You know what the
contracts.
Difference is, Zeke is? They never use the ammunition that they could use against Dak, which is, I don't know where we really grade you. Zeke, it was a definitive.
But isn't that the point of the conversation, right? The point of the conversation is, if we're still weighing body of work, we don't necessarily know who you are. The more he plays well, the more you got to sit there and say, well, he's showing us. Isn't that the whole reason for waiting anyway?
But to Whitlock's point, the floor is so high right now. And Todd France can't be sitting there saying, you know what? I'm just going to wait this thing out because you guys are still grading.
That Jerry would Jones be foolish. That would be foolish if they don't give him the if they give him the number that he's looking for. That's foolish. If you can get the deal done, you get the deal done if you're the player and the agent. But at the same time, if the franchise is not pushing hard to get the deal done, then you keep playing as though you have the money that you need, or you keep playing as though I have the chip on my shoulder to get the contract that I'm looking for. It could end bad in a situation for the Dallas Cowboys having to pay a whole lot more than what they're probably being asked to pay right now if they play that crap game. But in the end, if they do play that crap game and he doesn't perform as well, which you'd have to assume he is going to perform well because of the type of team he's playing for, you're going to have to pay more later.
Jeff, do you believe in team-friendly contracts? Would you make that argument to a quarterback?
Well, I would believe in it, but I'm not going to expect the quarterback to buy into it. You know,
that's it.
But think about the dynamics of this whole offseason. You know, okay, you want to get the quarterback done, but and we don't know. We think he's pretty good, but we don't know if he's good. But when does he play really good? Well, he plays really good when that running back's next to him. Mm-hmm. Well, the running back, where is he? He's out training someplace because we haven't signed him. So you got the running back signed now. Now you got the quarterback playing well. Now they're sure they see the picture becomes clear. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why the Zeke thing was such a big deal. Forget about the things that were said back and forth and between that. It's just negotiation. So you got a lot of different moving parts, but get the running back thing done. They did. And now let's see. Watch him play a couple weeks right here. And then if we're close, you finalize the deal.
Jeff Fisher's back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell.
Let's move on to Baltimore. Well, we'll see a couple of young, exciting QBs face off on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens hosting Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury, he sees a lot of similarities between the two players and says the two dynamic playmakers could be the future of the game. I want to ask you guys, who would you bet on to be the future of the game, Kyler or Lamar?
I'm gonna pass the grenade here. I'm gonna think about this one for a beat.
Oh, man, look, this is nearly a split decision, but I'm going to lean Lamar Jackson for a couple of reasons. One, he has a little looser screw, and I mean that in a positive way. Kyler Murray is very buttoned up. If you've ever been around him, you can hear even his coach, Kingsbury, talk about it. It's kind of hard to get past that first layer at times, meaning you're not as relatable, meaning we can only judge you as even a teammate on production because we're really not getting much of the personality. I saw Lamar Jackson out there balling, dancing with Hollywood, going all the way up and down the line of scrimmage, talking to guys. More relatable beyond production. And then you talk about who's been through the grinder already. And Lamar Jackson has been through the grinder in terms of questioning his abilities. What Kyler went through was just some warped criticism of, you got to pick between baseball and football, and we turned that into a negative when that was really a miracle. So I just think that Lamar's been through a little more, and because he's more relatable to the masses on that roster, I have to lean his way.
Switch jerseys. You got two of the same guys.
Yeah.
Really, really dynamic players, like Coach says. But if you're gonna have to choose right now, you gotta go with Lamar. I mean, he won how many games in a row? 8 out of 9 or 7 out of 8 last year, and went to playoffs, you know, and did that stuff. And we've seen one game out of Tyler, so yeah. I mean, you got to
really
go with
one
Lamar.
Quarter.
Yeah, one quarter, and he didn't have a preseason, and you know, and he's got a lot. I don't want to say this because I respect for the organization in Arizona, but I think we'd all agree that Baltimore has better talent around Lamar than Arizona, with the exception of Fitz, has around Tyler. Yeah. So there you have
coaching
it. Right
staff,
now,
certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I think Lamar is in a better organization.
Yes.
We just saw an organization give up on a coach they picked and a quarterback they pitched after 1 year. So Kyler's in an unstable organization, particularly in comparison to Baltimore. I'm going to argue the other side. Mm. I have an extreme bias against quarterbacks under 6'1". I've been on the record about that. I don't like short quarterbacks.
So 6'3".
I don't like short quarterbacks. Again, okay. Drew Brees. I call him the dirty little secret.
Russell Wilson.
I don't like short quarterbacks. Now, again, they're great. I'm not taking away from their greatness, but I just have a bias. Having said that, one of these guys has been groomed to be a great quarterback since birth. By his dad, who was a great college quarterback, Kyler Murray has been raised from birth to be exactly where he is today. Number one pick in the draft, leading the NFL team. I don't like his height, but I do like his heritage, his upbringing, all those other intangibles. His quirky personality kind of scares me. The fact that he's not relatable and not that great of a communicator, that scares me. But he's the number one overall pick for a reason. He won a Heisman Trophy at his size. What's to say, he's, and again, Lamar won a Heisman Trophy as well.
Yeah.
But Lamar wasn't the number one overall pick. Lamar isn't a natural thrower of the football, in my opinion. When I look at his release and all that, it still just seems odd to me, and it doesn't seem like, what's that release going to look like when he's under more pressure than Miami put him under? Kyler Murray is a quarterback. Whether I like his height or not, he's been one from day one.
I have to push back on the whole bloodline conversation. I'm looking at the quarterback position, the greatest in terms of accolade. I mean, Peyton Manning is my favorite quarterback, but most would say Tom Brady. And I don't know his pedigree in terms of raising, but I know he came into the league and he was on thin ice in terms of ability and opportunity, and he made the most of it to become the greatest of all time at that position. What I like Lamar Jackson. I never questioned his throwing ability. I've said this 1,000 times. Here's 1,001. The guys just needed to be comfortable at the NFL level when the game slows down, as it has, or at least it seemed, at least in week one, versus he doesn't have the ability and he can't play in that position. This is a guy who's so dynamic. They both, when they're running the ball, and I love the whole 2.0 of both of these guys, and I'm glad Kingsbury is really highlighting these guys who have more than just arm talent. They actually can extend plays. They actually can turn into a running back for you in certain situations when plays break down. But Lamar Jackson, the question marks against him, Warren Sharp always talks about it. Everyone is talking about it. He's the best passer we've ever seen in NFL history at the age of 21. Ever. And we're still...
By number.
By what else is that?
By number.
Numbers are just a statistical record of what your performance was.
Well, if you throw if you throw John Elway into this modern NFL...
It's a translation, but I hear you. I hear you.
I just don't like the way the ball comes out of Lamar's hand. It's not... I haven't seen that before.
There's been passers that have thrown the same ball and been accurate. I mean, I think you have to do this. First off, I shouldn't say this, but both of them run fast enough not to catch mono, right? Okay. So they're gonna make plays.
Man,
I'm concerned about. I would be concerned, big picture, about durability because of the just what they're subjecting themselves to.
Good point.
But
good point.
I am really impressed. Keep in mind, Lamar's got a new offensive coordinator this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so he's been through that and this change, and to put the numbers up he did week one, let's be patient and see what happens. It's going to be fun to watch, really fun to watch. And I'm really rooting for both of them.
Now, you know that Adam Gase's head just sunk lower after you cracked that mono.
I don't know if it can get any lower.
It can't get lower, bro. He laying down.
Take a deep breath.
He's laying down.
Is he?
Lord.
Joined again by Mark Slareth and LeVar Arrington. All right, let's revisit one of my favorite subjects, Cam Newton. Newton's Panthers host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers tonight on Thursday Night Football. It's a critical game in my relationship with Cam Newton. I've been a hardcore fan of Newton since his final season at Auburn. He won the Heisman Trophy and led the Tigers to the national championship.
It looked good back then.
While being dogged by a handful of overzealous reporters, upset that he allegedly sought the kind of financial rewards normally reserved for college coaches and administrators. Cam was my kind of quarterback. He reminded me of my favorite NFL player, John Elway. Cam was as dangerous as a runner as a passer. I thought Cam would make a run at being the GOAT. He was football's Tiger Woods. Funny I mentioned Tiger Woods. I have an unhealthy obsession with Tiger and Tiger's pursuit of Jack Nicklaus's record of 18 major championships. When Tiger plays poorly, it ruins my entire weekend. Had a lot of ruined weekends over the past 5 years as injuries have undermined Tiger's performance. Things got so bad early this year that I gave up. I publicly announced I was done expecting Tiger to ever compete for another major title. I made the announcement the day before the start of the Masters. maybe we should let that dream go and just enjoy the time we have left with Tiger playing at a high level. The key to that is changing our expectations. I just want Tiger to make the cut on Friday. I just want to see him play for 4 days. By setting low expectations, we have a much better chance of Tiger exceeding them and making us happy. Of course, Tiger won this year's Masters. And so with that in mind, I'm lowering my expectations for Cam Newton. He's never going to be Superman again. Whoa. He's never going to be the MVP Cam again.
Whoa.
He's done running the football. He's done being a long ball thrower. He's never fully committed to the proper footwork and mechanics that would make him a more consistent passer. What's worse than all of that is the fact that Cam is a socially awkward goofball, sort of like Tiger Woods.
Whoa.
It's the curse of having all that talent and all that attention. It makes you goofy. Cam shows up to games and post-game news conferences dressed like someone who idolized Michael Jackson, Dennis Rodman, and Steve Harvey equally. My favorite player can't dress like Mary Poppins on game day. Sue me. Cam's a hot mess. Tonight is my last night wasting emotional energy on him. At a time when NFL quarterbacks are playing at a high level at age 40 and beyond, Cam's best days are well behind him at age 30. All right, guys. Marcel, let's get it started.
You know damn well how this is about to go. Hurry up and tee me up.
Cam, no longer be an elite quarterback?
Oh, God. You are so wrong, man. You were wrong about Tiger, wrong about Cam. Let's just be real about it. Cam can become an MVP going forward, but it's going to look a lot different than it did in 2015. Let's just all come to that understanding. This guy last year, before injury, 6-2, MVP candidate, I remember you doing a wit log like, Cam Newton is tearing the league up, right? Remember that? Had a career high in completion percentage last year. Oh, but now his best days are behind him. I disagree with that. So let's talk about what elite is, what Cam Newton is. Top 10 quarterback, right?
Top 10.
Is top 10, right? Exhibit A. Tell me if Cam Newton is not a top 10 quarterback. Let's go with the consensus top 7 that we all know, right?
Well,
Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers. We all agree? Yes. Those are top 10 quarterbacks, definitely my top 7. Agree? Now, I want y'all to do me a favor and put 3 dudes under that list that's going to be better than Cam Newton. And don't worry, I'll wait.
Dak Prescott.
Wait.
Stop it. I'm waiting. Save Whitlock, y'all. Anybody. Somebody.
Matt Ryan.
Everybody scream.
Carson Wentz.
Matt Ryan.
Carson Wentz.
Matt Ryan.
Never won a playoff game. Matt Ryan. I can give you. Look,
Jared Goff.
Are we being for real up here? Cam Newton or Derek Carr?
I'm taking Cam Newton.
I don't think that's an easy. I don't think that's an easy answer.
Who? Y'all got three? Three.
What?
I'm not talking about up and coming and could be. I'm talking about accomplished and have done
Nobody's been the MVP.
Exactly.
But guys that are playing as well or better than Cam right now, you can come up with three. Here's what I would tell you. First off, MVP stands for what?
Most valuable player.
Most valuable player, not most valuable quarterback. See, you're on the wrong impression or the wrong premise. He's never been an elite quarterback. He's been an elite player.
There's a big difference.
There's a big difference there.
In 2015, he was an elite quarterback.
He completed 59% of his passes. That's an elite quarterback? No, it's not. He was never an elite thrower of the ball. What you've seen here is you've seen a transition because Cam Newton knows that Cam Newton can't play like Superman and survive. His body has broken down. What he did last year was the most impressive thing that I've seen him do since he came into this career, was to say, hey, I'm going to be honest with myself. I can no longer put myself in harm's way. What I'm going to do is learn how to be a quarterback. And he did it exceptionally well for 8 games last year until his shoulder just quit on him. So what I'm telling you is he can play and he can develop into an elite level quarterback, but he's never going to be the elite level, like, he's not going to put himself into harm's way to be the elite level player or the MVP player, which I think is better. Well, I think what he's doing right now is way better.
35
and I'd love to see it.
And 10 interceptions is not elite?
I said he was not.
I understand 60%.
I said he was not an elite thrower of the ball. When you have what he had and the way he played, Absolutely. Bar, he was an MVP.
Before LeVar goes, I'm just going to say this.
Yeah, okay,
I don't like you disrespecting him as a quarterback in 2015. Because, again, you think quarterback is just throwing the ball. No, the definition of a quarterback is the guy who takes the hike from center. That's it. And Cam took the hike from center, and he ran the football. That's part of quarterbacking. And he threw the football. Yeah. And in 2015, he was the best at quarterback.
I agree. I was going to push back, and that was actually going to be one of my points. And I'm going to push back on Wiley as well on disagreeing with the Tiger Woods assessment in comparison with Cam. I think it's spot on, and I think it's very accurate. You look at the fact that he had a rough go at it against a 19th overall defense overall, 14th versus the pass and the Rams. Now, the Rams are the runner-ups in the Super Bowl, but it was nonetheless it was a tough outing for him. So when I look at the comparison and saying, okay, let's lower our expectations, that doesn't mean that he can't be that. It doesn't mean that Tiger Woods couldn't transition into winning that championship like he did. But the reality of it is that you at one point expected Tiger to always win. At some point, you expected to see Cam Newton do some of the things that were just super, super out of the norm for somebody at his position. Is he at that age now, physically, where he can do the things that he once did in that season that we're talking about? I don't think he is. And so if he's able to transition to a higher level, ascend to a higher level than what he did in 15, I think the verdict is out on that. And I think that it's hard to justify, especially when you're in such a difficult, arguably the hardest division in all of the NFL. So I'm going to lower my expectations of it.
And I'm going to tell you the other thing that I want y'all to deal with is mentally, this is where the Tiger Woods, Cam Newton analogy, just mentally, some guys just aren't built for adversity after adversity after adversity. And I think, Cam, when your career has been built on your physical gifts and someone's, no, we're going to take those away from you, I think that messes with your mind.
That's the thing. But you guys, I have a few points here. One, don't forget who Cam Newton is present day. A guy who was coming off a shoulder surgery and shoulder injury, and then a preseason foot injury. So he's coming off of two injuries without a lot of practice. All right, and opportunities to go out there with live bullets. Then we're going to also highlight C-Mac in this offense. McCaffrey's going to be more of the mainstay in this offense than in years prior. Then let's not act like the Rams are just scrubs. And I don't like rankings when you go into a new season because you have new personnel. So we can say 19th ranked defense. There's eight new dudes out there. So don't give me last year's rankings. You're going against a team that got that close. They're hungry. They're ready to go. And they were fresh. They didn't even play in the preseason, the guys that they count on. So I just think it's too early to discount Cam when last seen on a football field in a regular season meaningful game, he was an MVP candidate.
Let me just say this.
Because
I love the fact that you've quit on Cam, except you're still defending him. Because I can tell that you're not really quitting on Cam.
You ain't breaking up.
Critical night.
You are mad, but you're waiting for your phone to ring. You're waiting for that call at midnight, baby. You're angry right
now. Those three bubbles.
Text me, girl. Girl, I don't even want that call.
Hello? Yeah, I'll be right over.
So, I mean, that's what you're doing right now. Yeah. But here's the deal. Like, what Cam did in 2015 was amazing. I'm not going to take that away from him. I would never take that away from him. It was incredible. What I'm telling you is Cam has come to the realization, very much like you said, my body cannot handle that. And for me to be elite, I have to change my game. And he's embraced that, and I've had the conversation with him. Mono and mono, like you and I are sitting here.
Yep.
Okay? So that's where he is right now. And I, for one, that makes me proud. Because what's the old saying? I've seen a lot of really good young running quarterbacks. I ain't never seen a good old running quarterback. They don't survive. And he knows it.
Here's the problem. Mm. And you, Mark, I know how well researched you are. You probably went back and watched the game, but you were calling the game while I was watching Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And the problem I have, there were about three critical throws against the Rams that the play was there and Cam didn't come through. That's what separates the really good quarterbacks from the mediocre quarterbacks right. in the NFL. They could have won that game. Their defense played a tremendous game, kept them in that game, turned the Rams over and put them, blocked a punt, put them back in the game, and Cam blew it. And that's what had my weekend miserable, and it's why tonight I'm just like, this is it, Cam. If you can't beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Jameis Winston, I'm done.
Let me
I
just,
got something for you.
Yeah, okay, let me
yep.
go.
Yep.
I think in here, that's why I've said I don't ever believe he's been an elite-level thrower of the football. In critical situations, I've seen too many of those plays. But I will give this to Marcellus because he's right. Coming off a shoulder and then you hurt your foot in camp. And
sounds like Tiger Woods.
Well, when your foot, let me just tell you as a quarterback, if you got a foot, rotational force comes from the ground through the hips to the arm. That's exactly the way it works. And so when you all of a sudden, and this is endemic of the league in general when it comes to preseason, when nobody practices, you know how much sloppy garbage football we saw this weekend? Because nobody's ready to play, and that happens.
I got a better example for me. He's not Tiger Woods. He's Blake Griffin. And you got to remember, Blake Griffin hit the league by storm and started to transition, realizing my body can't do that all the time. And some people, because he's in Detroit right now, think he has fallen off. Oh, no, he hasn't. Career high in scoring, assists, and the three-point line where the game has transitioned to. He is Blake Griffin. He's going to change his game and protect himself in
that's
the process and become greater at it.
I got one better.
We
got
to go, LeVar. Oh, but again, that's like Blake Griffin was the poster child. Now he's not. He's something different and good.
Better. He's
this
a better player, but
this
not
guy was Superman. We'll see if he can be Batman.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mark Slareth and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's move to Thursday Night Football, where Jameis Winston and the Bucs will try to bounce back tonight against the Panthers. After a sloppy Week 1 loss to the 49ers, Jameis threw three picks in that game, including two pick sixes, and he also threw some major doubt on whether Bruce Arians would be able to revitalize the former number one pick's faltering career. All right, the question here is, does Winston have any chance to salvage his career?
Any chance to salvage his career? I'm a naysayer. I'm a doubter. I haven't seen the progress as expected from a guy who has what Jameis Winston has in terms of attributes. But I'm not going to lie to y'all, and I'm going to keep it 100. I remember watching Jameis Winston in college and saying, let me just make a mark of this moment, because I knew that this may not end well for Jameis Winston, despite all the love and attention he was getting. I went to that Rose Bowl game at the Rose Bowl when he was already a Heisman Trophy winner, won a national championship, and projected number one overall. And then I went out there and I saw this one play. And I know this play turned into something of jest and everyone was laughing, but my friend George Reister of Fox was an Oregon fan, and we were sitting next to each other, and I said, mark that moment, man. I don't know about my man right here. And I started to watch his career with a different
Lord.
That's the number one pick. I started looking at his career a whole lot differently, man. And I'm telling you, I've done this many a times, not always right. Day one when Kaepernick took a knee, I looked at him like, this may not end up well, but I ain't gonna hate on my man until it turned into silence and settlement. I knew in this moment, Jameis Winston, this may not end up well, and I think we are there right now. With everything on the line, in Week 1, playing San Fran, you go out there and throw three picks. Now your coach has to absolve you of two of those picks just to save your confidence, and you're the number one overall pick. I'm not piling on Jameis because he knows I like him, but in terms of what he's done, I haven't seen the trajectory go where it should have.
Let me quote the great Lloyd Christmas. One in a million? So you're telling me there's a chance. I read ya. I think this is almost, and I love my man B.A., Bruce Arians, who's coaching them. I think this is almost a relationship that's just bound to go awry, because Bruce Arians, one of his main mantras is no risk it, no biscuit. Yeah. Let's go deep, baby. Yeah. And I've never seen a guy who's more willing to throw it into a team meeting than Jameis Winston. Man, he what, four DBs over there? Yeah, I can fit this in. There's no problem. Like, he'll throw it into a doggone defensive team meeting on a day-to-day basis. So how is that, like, how does that work? I'm just saying, if you get to your fifth-year option as a quarterback, especially a number one overall quarterback, and they haven't come to you and said, let's get this thing done, there's a reason. And I just don't think it's going to be here in Tampa Bay. I think they're going to be looking for a new one, new quarterback.
We've seen what Jameis has had to offer. I mean, it's done in terms of what his ceiling is. He hit that ceiling. I mean, whether people want to accept that or not, he's hit his ceiling.
And 25.
He's hit his ceiling in terms of what he's able to accomplish. I mean, if you're looking at it from a critical age, well, you know what? Some people hit their ceilings at younger ages. Some people mature earlier, stop growing.
Yeah, we all played with that 12-year-old who couldn't be tackled at 12, right? Sure. Yeah. Had a full beard and everything. Yep. He didn't make the high school
Everyone
team.
Caught up to
Rich Gannon wasn't Rich Gannon until like age 35.
That's my guy. There's
always the exceptions. Machine. There's always exceptions to the rule, but I think we've looked at Jameis, and we've seen what his capabilities are at this point. You look at him, and we keep referencing Florida State because those were his best days. Those were the best days of seeing what Jameis Winston had to offer. And I think the reality of it is when you have the type of athletes that were playing on that Florida State team at that time in the college ranks, it's not as difficult to be successful as it is in
having
to read.
Some franchises just aren't quarterback friendly.
And Tampa Bay happens to be one of them. Tampa Bay happened since Brad Johnson, right?
Doug Williams.
Well,
they won the Super Bowl with Brad Johnson, so.
Yeah, but he wasn't any good.
Well, let me be real. I mean, because we're covering the Super Bowl Foxes this year. I'm going to see Jameis at some of these Super Bowl parties because they certainly ain't going to be in it, right? So I want to make sure he knows that I got his back in some respects. He's only second to Dan Marino in touchdowns thrown by the age of 25, more than Peyton Manning, Drew Bledsoe, Matthew Stafford by that same age, to Whitlock's point. And I played against a machine known as late bloomer Rich Gannon, and it can change. But, boy, you're in the 0.00001% now if you're talking about he's going to change things.
All right, Darnell, did we miss anything?
Yes, sir. Speaking of the Bucks and Panthers, hope you guys are excited for the new free-to-play game, Thursday Night Football, Super 6. One of the questions for tonight is, which team will win and by how many points? So, Whitlock and Marcellus, who you got?
I have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning in a shocking upset.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Shocking.
They're
shocking.
They're getting 6.5 points. I got them winning 24-21. Close game. Good game.
I think this was going to go as advertised, and Tampa Bay is going to lose this game, and that won't be a shock. 27-11. Yeah.
27-11.
Yeah, they're going to get a field goal and have to go for two. Just try to keep it close.
We got double digits, coach.
Oh, man. All right, that's how the game's going to play out.
Yeah, so before the game kicks off tonight, download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play Thursday Night Football Super 6 for free for a chance to win $25,000 of Terry Bradshaw's money.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about Cam Newton.
You know.
Oh, my God. Who are you, Cam or The Weeknd?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Let's get to the big dummy of the day.
Go get that.
And it's with deep regret, Marcellus, you got to get this today. Hey, man, because for real, I did not realize it. Jameis Winston's career is solely on your hands. You are the only person that saw that play. You could have called that brother and gave him the heads up. Now look at his career. It's your fault.
That ain't on me. That was
ain't
a meme.
Nobody else seen that but you.
That went viral, man. That ain't on me.
Let's talk some Cam Newton.
Your man ain't
was
got
looking
no virus.
To bounce back tonight from an ugly week one loss to the Rams and an even uglier post-game outfit. Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
What are the chances Cam's outfit tonight drives me crazy?
Drives you crazy?
Yeah.
1,000% chance. Look, if it ain't from Ross or CNR, you ain't feeling it. I know how you roll. You so conservative. Got to look presidential out there. Man, these kids ain't looking presidential. They looking fresh. And I love it, man. So you ain't with the millennial way. So I know you're going to be upset.
I just hope. If you're out there, Cam, and you're watching, if you got nothing else to do, go to Tom Ford, get you a nice little custom suit.
Hey, here you go. Spend all that money for nothing. No.
Just leave it at that. You don't got to do all them extras.
No. Do you, Cam. It's your clothes. You wear what you want to wear.
Why you got to want to look like Uncle Jimmy? Uncle Jimmy, you got any thoughts on on Cam with that crazy outfit. You got any thoughts on Cam?
I see you.
Look here, man, let me explain something to you right now. The question is whether or not Cam's outfit is gonna upset you.
Yeah.
And the answer is hell to the yeah. Cam's outfit tonight gonna make you cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Look at them legs.
Hey, man, look, it's like one of my daddies used to tell me. He used to say, boy, your hair is nappy and your nose is snotty. If you don't know something about fashion, you need to go ask somebody. See here, right now, I know you knows nothing about this. So I'm gonna give you a pass. You know why? Because I know it's hard for you to know something about this when you've been shopping at the Al Roker collection in the Husky department for the last 20 years.
Al Roker.
You know, I know what it's like to try. I know it's hard for you to find you some 5828 Versace skinny leg jeans. You know, I'm gonna defend Cam and his sense of fashion mobility, but I'm not gonna defend his play. You know, I told y'all before, Cam is a victim of the fight or flight theory.
The fight or flight.
Yeah, so now he's trying to act like he can fight, but he know damn well he ain't gonna bust a grape in a fruit fight. You know what I'm saying? He's not about that life.
Stop.
You know, my grandmama used to tell me, hey, boy, good run beat a bad stand any day. Tonight, if it get tight, take flight. Get your couple runs and...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you want Cam to go back to the running game.
Yeah, yeah. Superman. Flight, huh? Take off.
You want Superman.
Say whatever you want to say about Cam.
I see you, homie.
You know, at least he can run. I like him better than I like that damn, what's his name? Jameis Winston. The boy is 6'4". 227 and run a 5.940. The only black quarterback in the NFL that can get outrun by Peyton Manning. Or his brother Eli Manning.
Wow.
Hey, and as the young people say, Uncle Jimmy dead ass serious. What the hell wrong with the boy? Huh? The boy got issues. The boy got an identity problem. That's how his ass got in trouble with them crab legs. The boy went in there. Look, I have from a reliable source. It was a nice, fresh pile of chicken nuggets right there. No, this uppity ass wanna go in, oh, let me get some of them crab legs. That's just like your people.
I'm doing too much.
I call the boy Jameis Stupid Winston.
Oh, man, that ain't right.
Hey, I knew it was something wrong with the boy in the pregame fight when he started chewing on his fingers. The boy chewed off his fingers on his throwing hand, Marcus. And then want to dap her like,
throw the W's.
I know, man.
Throw the W's.
Look here, man, let me tell you something. You always talking about your boy Colin Kaepernick got an identity crisis. Mm. Hell, at least he can run. What the hell wrong with your boy Jameis Winston?
Hell yeah, get him.
Huh? I gotta go quick
bangs.
Here.
Let's get him.
I move Jameis down to a 61, a role player, job performance down to a 12. Knock the other ones a few points. 61
all
role
red,
player.
All red, huh?
Yeah.
You are off the Cam wagon, boy.
Job performance. That is Cam.
Yeah, I give him a little hit on the job performance, but everything else goes up. But scout team?
The internet agrees with me, got him at scout team. You got him at an all-star?
I got him on all-star because I know who he is, and he's going to show y'all tonight.
God, where's something presentable tonight, Cam?